belongs to pop, not soda.
It's pop. Like this. Pop.
Welcome to Pop, Not Soda. And now it's time for Brian, and... Oh, damn. Enjoy the show!
Welcome to your favorite podcast, your weekly sits back of pop culture, Pop Not Soda. We are back with episode 7. My name is Dan, and as always, I am joined by my co-hosts, Brett and Brian. How are you doing, fellas?
Doing great, as always. Another long week. Check it off. How about you, Brett? How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. You know, I'm going to start a bet where I'm going to put $5 down on if Brian Owens brings over a Subway sandwich every time he comes over before the podcast.
That's a safe bet.
And you know what? It's the exact same sandwich every fucking time.
What is it? A BMT? So,
no, it's got to be a cold cut trio.
No, you're both wrong.
Oh.
It's oven roasted chicken breast, foot long on wheat, with spinach, tomatoes, green peppers, cucumbers, pepperoncinis, and a little bit of ranch.
And that's the weekly Brian's
that
diet.
That sounds like the white girl special at Subway.
You know, I've been listening to a few episodes, though. We never ask you how you're doing, Dan. How are you doing, man?
Thank you.
Nobody gives
a shit. It's only taken over a season.
People would much rather hear what I put in my Subway sandwich than hear how you're doing.
Dan's week has been.
I hate to break it to you, but...
I'm very close to walking out. No, I'm doing great. Thanks for asking, Brett.
Good, man.
I'm very excited to record tonight. We've got a great show. Brian, what are you reviewing tonight in your movie? Your movie review? Your homeless movie review?
Well, I thought it would be prudent to review the winner of the Best Picture. So I will be reviewing
nice
Spotlight
timing.
This week.
Very nice. Good call. Awesome. I think we're going to talk Steph Curry.
Woo!
And his
baby
ridiculousness on the basketball court. In the sports world, I think we're going to talk some Erin Andrews and give some updates on her legal battle with the Marriott Hotel, which is getting a little dirty.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had to rewatch the video just to be, you know, refreshed of the situation. Only for...
Oh, you're talking
like
about that video?
Purposes.
Oh.
Crack research team over here.
You and the intern, huh? You and Short Round? Benjamin?
I mean, he had never seen it.
Oh, so you're breaking him in.
He ran away.
Oh, so he's breaking him in.
I guess you had to.
12 to 13 minutes.
Mature responsibility, breaking him in.
Absolutely.
Yeah, young answer.
I think if you have not seen it yet, the Ghostbusters trailer is out.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got some feelings about it.
Yeah. I'm just surprised, though, that they had all women except for the black guy.
We'll save that for later, Brian.
But let's get into the Oscars right now. Because that just happened this past weekend, and, you know, it was an interesting watch.
Yeah, from the beginning to the end. I mean, it was...
And not like a good interesting. It was like a, how many times can I rewatch the most awkward moment when Stacey Dash comes on stage and no one knows what to do, say, or look like?
Okay, so are we going to start with Stacey Dash?
Yes,
then?
Can we? Can we get right
okay,
into Stacey
Dash? Okay, so
what
happened?
A little dash of Stacey.
What happened to her? Like, is she... I don't want to go here, but is she skin bleaching? Because that's like from
no,
what
I think
I've heard,
she's always
is,
been light skinned and
has she
uses
okay.
a lot of makeup.
Okay, my God, she looked pretty.
Sammy Sosa.
Yeah,
that's what you
though.
Think. All makeup.
I can't really assume the skin bleaching.
Yeah,
especially because I don't know if
if that even is a thing.
Yeah.
Yes,
I know. Allison showed me a picture of her in Clueless compared to what she was at the Oscars, and holy crap.
That's when she was working, and I think, you know, she was out in the daylight, and now I just don't think anyone knows who she is, so she's just back in her, under the bridge, where, you know, trolls are.
Okay.
Because, I guess I could have saw where that could have been funny, and Chris Watts would have been like, yeah, come on, it'll be fun, and people will forgive you, and you'll get past it. No, because she took it completely seriously.
Yeah.
Chrissy Teigen's face. Oh, my God. Not Chrissy Teigen. Sorry, that's a whole different subject.
Yeah.
What's her face? John Legend's wife. Why am I blanking on her name?
It is Chrissy
Teigen. That is Chrissy Teigen.
Oh, yeah. My bad. Oh, yeah. I'm good. Her face when Stacey Dash came out, the look of cringe on it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was painful.
Meme-worthy.
So, I mean, watching that entire ceremony, too, I think the strong undertones were African-Americans and sexual abuse victims.
Yeah, it's just Hollywood is racist, climate but not change. Like a regular yeah. racist. They're, as Chris Rock called it, a sorority racist.
Right. Yeah, yeah. It's a good old boys club.
I mean, I thought that Chris Rock did as good of a job as he could in that scenario.
Oh, he with came all out. That, he you came know, out to fight the power.
Yeah,
and...
yeah. So with all of you know the shit happening, and then him being a black host, and you know, I think just really stepping up and not shying away from anything. And I thought he was really fucking funny.
Oh yeah, he hit it on the mark.
I will say I think the one thing that missed the mark was when he made the Asians are good at math joke, because you can't come out and be like want to make jokes about how you're racist and then. Fall back on a racist joke about somebody else. It pulled away from, like, you know, his whole night.
The big thing with the Asian thing, too, like, I saw, did you see Ollie G come out?
Ollie G!
And he made the Asian joke, too, though. But I saw, did you hear the behind-the-scenes story about how he pulled that off?
He wasn't supposed to do
he
that.
Was
right?
not, he was yeah, not he was not allowed to be anything like that. He was only supposed to be Sacha Baron Cohen. And then it was Isla Fisher, his wife. That had all of his disguise,
her purse
tucked in her purse or whatever, and then they ended up showing some photos right before they're it a great happened couple. Or whatever.
Yeah, I can't believe that they're married, but I guess she kind of seems like
she's crazy. Like I'm pretty sure she is her character from The Wedding Crashers.
Yeah, like ride or die.
Good for you, Ollie G. Then
yeah. But he did tell Jimmy Kimmel afterwards. He was like, "Yeah, no, I stepped away to use the bathroom, and then all of a sudden I missed it, and Ali filled in for me." Like, that was his excuse. But yeah, well, that's because he won an Oscar, right? Or he was nominated at least for
Borat.
Well, he was nominated for Borat for Ryan Borat, but he was also nominated for Les Mis.
Sacha Baron Cohen.
I think
really.
I think
or Baron. Sorry,
maybe the song. Like, I know that he has a Les Mis nomination. Maybe it was because it was nominated for Best Picture. And they just include that because he was on the title cast. But that's, you know, this year they had like the interesting facts.
Yeah.
Every time a presenter would come up and they would show you this little tidbit. And yeah, Les Mis was mentioned as one of his like, oh, and Sweeney Todd. And Sweeney
yeah,
Todd.
Okay, yeah,
I think he got mentioned before
he
too.
Was good in Sweeney Todd. I remember that. Yeah. But back to the Oscars though. I mean, so Ollie G came out, Stacey Dash came out. Were there any highs or lows? Like, what was the high point for you, Dan, you think?
Oh, the high point for me was definitely Leo.
I think
finally
we can all...
winning.
Yeah, I think the entire world was waiting for that.
Yeah, except for everyone who had done the Jordan crying face memes already.
Right.
Who wanted to be the first people to repost Leo losing again.
Yeah.
But I would say it's a tie between Leo winning and... them actually placing a dude in a bear costume in the balcony at the Oscars.
You know, they showed that category though, and we were watching it, and it was like, what it had Fassbender, it had Damon, it had
Cranston
from Trumbo, yep. It had
and Eddie Raymond, the guy
Eddie
won last year.
Yeah,
for,
Eddie Raymond, for everything. Yeah, so I mean, you look at that.
It wasn't easy.
Holy God!
It's really funny. So we were watching it with my roommates, and. He didn't know who was nominated for the Oscars. He didn't really pay attention or anything. But it was on. We were all watching it, so he sat down and he watched it with us. And he's like, I think Leo's got it. Like, Leo's got it. And they show the clip of Eddie Raymond, and then they show, like, him and the Danish girl, and he just goes, oh, fuck. Eddie Raymond's going to win it. Oh, God damn it, Leo. No, not this way.
You know, I'm thinking, too, like, you know who probably hated Leo winning that the most? Scorsese. I guarantee you, Scorsese is just like,
right.
Departed, all this stuff.
The Aviator.
Yeah.
Didn't get nominated for Gangs of New York.
Right. Nothing like that. Yeah, yeah.
What did you guys think the Mad Mats sweeping, like, basically the first half of the show?
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was just. I thought that Mad Max was not only a great action movie, but... just a really great way of telling a story in a non-traditional way. Not a lot of dialogue, not a lot of, traditional movie making.
Not a lot of CGI.
Yeah.
There's a lot of practical effects.
And that's the thing, too, is like when they were talking about Best Director coming out, which was the final one that Inarritu won for the second time in a row, which, man, that guy's lighting it up right now. But getting back to it, though, like when we were talking about it with the direction, those shots that are happening in Mad Max, when you have 10 cars going across a wide open desert and you're trying to direct, I mean, it's like it's directing 1,000 pieces at once. And the fact that he wasn't even that much more, I know he was, you know, nominated for it, but I feel like there wasn't much of a heavy debate for Henry.
I don't know. I think it's tough because Miller when they kind of showed some of the effects, like the behind the scenes of The Revenant, and it's that drop where somebody goes off the cliff with their horse. And they showed like, oh yeah, this wasn't like a fake cliff. The cliff wasn't that tall, but we threw the guy off and we just had the pillow big inflatable at the bottom to catch him.
Yeah.
In the wilderness. I'm like, okay, that takes some work because you're throwing people off cliffs. And so I think it's hard. It was difficult. I think if The Revenant wasn't as real as they made it, like if it was more studio based, I feel like Miller could have taken it. But
yeah,
well, I think a big part of that as well is that the guy who did the cinematography, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, for The Revenant also won. So when you have the combination of, you know, one of the best directors paired with one of the best cinematographers, like, it's game over.
And this guy's cleaned it for 3 years in a row, too.
I think he's won 4 of the last 5 years.
Is that what it is? Because he moved from Cuaron over to Inarritu. And he won for Gravity, and then he won for something prior to that, too. Yeah, I think, or whatever. So that guy is locking it down, too, on the cinematography. The craziest thing, too, when I heard about The Revenant, and I guess, I mean, as much as you can argue for Miller and like the set pieces and the direction on that or whatever, Inarritu really, really nailed it down on that. And I heard stories about that filming and I mean the lighting, because he wanted no studio shots whatsoever, no interior shots whatsoever. So they relied on natural lighting the entire time. And when you're filming in, I guess, whatever the location was, they would set up a shop. They'd spend an hour and a half setting up a shot, and then the light would change. And then they'd be like, boom, we're lost for the day. Got to come back tomorrow and do that again. So it was like this test of patience the entire time, too, where you can't really do that to a lot of directors in Hollywood.
That's why Tom Hardy was pissed, right? Because that filming took forever. Exactly, and that's why he ended up missing Suicide Squad.
For Suicide Squad, right. So, I mean, but at the end of the day, when you are a part of a project like that, I think anybody that's walking out of a project like The Revenant is going, that's something that'll never happen again.
I will say, I think my other favorite moment was Michael Keaton coming down with a fuck yeah, like fist pump, like,
and grabbing
the
cookies.
Tiger Woods fist pump and like, fuck yeah. Because now he's been in the best picture back-to-back years after I hadn't seen Michael Keaton. He was in The Other Guys. Like that's the last place I remember him before Birdman. And eating some goddamn cookies on the stage with Morgan Freeman and having the time of his life.
Dan, don't forget he did voice the Ken doll in Toy Story 3.
Oh,
okay, but I didn't see him. I heard him.
Yeah, that's good. Good call.
Yeah, I also felt like the Girl Scout cookie thing, which was funny, but I felt like it was like, oh, so you're trying to do Ellen's pizza skit.
I haven't...
because he was like, oh, we know you've got money. Fork it over. And I was like, this is kind of like what Ellen did when she brought pizza. And
that's
was like,
right.
Oh, we need to pay the guy.
That, yeah.
So fork up money. I know you've got it. Like, it was a little similar to me. Like, it was just kind of like the same... I guess sort of bit.
That joke just did not hit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And whoever Linda Dunn is, he really dislikes. But I thought it was nice he raised money and like 65 grand, Jesus. But you know, people want their Girl Scout 50s.
Yeah. Well, one of my favorite moments from the evening was Louis C.K. when he presented the award. And I didn't really think about it, but I saw a couple of articles on Monday saying that, you know, did Louis C.K. just audition to host next year's Oscars? Because I think he could be a really funny but serious kind of guy. Like, you know, just kind of like Louis is, you know? It's funny but also very dark, you know, in a lot of ways.
It's how Gervais works.
Yeah, well...
Gervais is more brash.
Yeah.
Like he's more offensive.
Not as in your face as Ricky Gervais, you know? But, like, he'll cut you.
Yeah.
You know? Like, he won't hold punches. And yeah, I guess it would be hilarious.
Louis's more about the social scene rather than personally taking digs at people like Gervais does.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's still that caliber of a person, though, that you're hiring on where you're going, like, from a production standpoint, you're going, oh, Jesus Christ, I hope this thing doesn't go south really quick because this guy can go off his rocker and take this thing in another direction, and we have no way to cut it.
I mean, yeah, but he was – I will say, you know what else I liked? When they did the nominated – like, they – the best animated feature film, and they put Buzz and Woody, like actual toys, up on a pedestal, and then they zoomed in, and then they were alive, and then when they zoomed out, that they made the guys from Inside Out walk around them, so you can see them like laying down again. I like the attention to detail.
Yeah, that's cool.
But fuck the Minions. Nice touch. I did not want to see the Minions at all. I was very upset that they were on my screen while the Oscars were on.
Yeah, you have
hatred
against these Minions.
They're not funny. Oh, they're not.
Not even
they
bananas?
Weren't the best part of Despicable Me, Jay.
You don't even
they
like bananas?
No. No.
Oh, my God, man.
You're like the only person ever met.
That's untrue. There's actually a lot of hate on the internet for the Minions, okay? I am not alone.
Yes. I don't meet everybody on the internet, but I've met you, and you're the only person I've met.
That's fine. That's fine.
That doesn't like Minions. Just saying. You're the outcast.
But yeah, I mean, it went better than I think a lot of people expected. I think Chris Rock did better than a lot of people expected. But I will say, you know, in the realm of movies, I am worried.
Yeah, something leaked today, and I'm sure people are going to be talking about it a lot more on Monday.
Would you say you were scared?
Maybe petrified.
Or afraid? No. Ain't afraid. You ain't afraid of no.
No, I mean, I'm not afraid. I guess I'm not afraid. I'm just worried.
What's going down, Dan?
The Ghostbusters trailer
in the neighborhood happened.
Was very strange.
Yeah, it dropped today, huh? The Ghostbusters, the new Ghostbusters.
Very much anticipated. Yeah. Trailer, I would say.
And it's yeah, because a lot of people, they've been like, you could barely get any images of what the characters were going to be dressed as or what any of the suits were going to look like or what Echo One was going to look like. And the trailer came out and I wasn't impressed.
Oh my God.
What did you guys feel?
I had mixed feelings because I don't mind if a comedic movie trailer isn't that funny, because what I'm hoping is that they're saving the big jokes for the actual movie watching experience, as opposed to all these terrible comedies. They put the funniest parts in the trailer so you can watch the trailer and just be good with it.
Like every Kevin Hart movie,
right? But I was also thinking that this movie was rated R because it's Paul Feig, who has done nothing but rated R movies.
The Heat.
He did, you know, of course, Bridesmaids is probably his most well-known movie.
He did Spy,
he did
too,
Spy,
right?
As well, which is a really funny rated R movie. And I think he's just going to, like, be too limited. And, you know, with Kristen Wiig and Melissa McCarthy, like, they've been in a lot of really successful rated R movies. Why limit them? And, you know, try and tell this cookie cutter story.
Now, does it have a rating? Is it going PG-13?
It doesn't have a rating on its trailer, but it looks very
from PG-13, the trailer, yeah. We can tell it's going to be PG-13.
And I think because the original's PG-13 and, you know, the Ghostbusters is more thought of as a, like, family movie. It's something that has a little bit of adult humor, but you can take your kids to go watch it. Slimer is very much a, like, it's for the kids. It's funny. It's slapstick. But this is the other question. Is it a sequel or is it a reboot?
Well, no, it's a sequel.
It's a sequel.
Because
yeah.
It's happening 30 years after after Venkman and everybody saved New York City. So
then why do they have an Echo One, and why, like, I'm so confused.
See,
is it a reboot or is it a sequel?
Well, no, it's a sequel.
The trailer makes you think it's a sequel, but then if you watch, like, the first 15 seconds is a sequel. The rest of the trailer makes you think it's
is
a
no
reboot.
Acknowledgement of the previous Ghostbusters whatsoever.
Right,
no.
That's true, actually.
And like, they pull the library ghost straight from the original movie. Like, I'm so confused.
Which, on that note, too. Okay, so I want to talk about that because I'm pretty nitpicky when it comes to the special effects that came in Ghostbusters 1 and Ghostbusters 2, because those were awesome. Yeah. Because it was practical effects that then had like a special effect just layer on it, mm-hmm. or whatever.
Right.
But this one, it just seemed like the shot of them going through Times Square. And just...
Oh, it's so fake.
Like, there's so much CGI that they're relying upon where you could tell that... I don't even think the ghosts look that well designed, first off. But you can tell that it's not at all a practical effect that then getting layered, which I think was half of the fun of these other ones. The one thing that was good in that trailer was her getting, like, vomited on. And you saw, like, all the slime or whatever happened on that or whatever. But yeah, that was the
ectoplasm.
That's the best part.
You know, and that was seriously the best part to me, and I couldn't even like half smile to that. I think the entire trailer.
All right, well, I've got a serious point to bring up, and I think it goes along the lines of the Osters and Oster So White, is that you cast four very popular female comedians, and you have one black actress, and she's the only character in the movie without an advanced degree. You took the diverse character. And you put them in a trope that we've seen over and over, that you have to make the minority character the street smart character, because she has a line in the trailer that says like, "Oh, I know New York,"
right?
And that she's the MTS worker. Why couldn't she be like one of the PhDs? Why can't why like you're making the, you know, the black actress the uneducated character again?
Yeah. What were the origins of Winston? Was he
again,
like kind
he
of
he wasn't educated, and that was the same thing.
Okay,
like,
okay.
Yeah,
so
same thing.
That's where I almost think that they...
It's just a literal remake.
Yeah, so that's where I'm almost saying that it's not intended to be that offensive.
I'm not saying it's offensive. Time. I just thought it wasn't creative. Like, you have an opportunity. Like, you can mix it up.
To break them out. Right. Yeah, I hear you on that. Yeah.
And that's where it kind of lost me, because then I'm like, well, you like when we talk about some reboots, like what's successful and what's not successful... is when you literally try to just remake a movie from 30 years ago, like Total Recall, like RoboCop, like Point Break, it doesn't work because you've seen the movie before. Like, Star Trek was successful because J.J. Abrams found a little way to spin it and mm-hmm. to make right. a reboot, but it's kind of a sequel. Like, it's a multiverse film. And I know it's easier in sci-fi to do that, but, like, just switching the characters out and making them women doesn't make the movie interesting, because I can just go watch the original Ghostbusters with Bill Murray, and I know I'm going to already like that.
Well, and it's Harold Ramis, Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd. I mean, the comedic chops on that cast, though, are insane. And I don't know if this cast can pull the weight of that.
Go ahead,
yeah.
Brian.
I think that the comedic potential of these four is just as high as those other actors.
As long as they're not handcuffed.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And we just, like, it's just a different time, you know? Like, you could get away with being PG-13 funny and being able to just produce the funniest product, you know? So it's like Chevy Chase and, you know, Bill Murray for a long time. But in today's day and age, like, you can't do that, you know? People aren't going to talk about just a really bland remake. You know, people want to see something different. Like, I think Deadpool's a perfect example of that. It's something different. You know, it's in the same mold as all of these other comic book movies, but there's just something special about it, you know? And I think if they did that with this movie, it would have made it immensely more successful. It would have been way more fun. And I just, yeah, after watching the trailer, I just don't.
There's
think
little.
And I wanted it to be successful, because it did get a lot of heat to begin with, and I wanted it to be successful. I wanted it to be funny, because why not have another great Ghostbuster related movie and enjoy it?
It just kind of shows you why Bill Murray was forever trying to delay this thing to ever come to fruition.
Bill Murray and Harold Ramis were just great at writing.
Yeah.
And I think the Ghostbuster script, you go watch that movie again, the lines that are written are so good, like they're great. And I think what I'm worried about is these comedians there, and now where we're at with comedy, it's a lot more of just riffing, like go back and forth and film it, and I don't know how that's gonna work.
Yeah, letting an improv scene go, but it doesn't require much direction on the back end, which I'm not looking forward to it too much. The one thing I think is interesting too is with the whole Ghostbusters like franchise is, I mean, if it's going to be a sequel, what do you want to see from the original coming back? Is there an actor that you want to see? Is there a ghost that you want to see? If there's one thing that you could see coming back, we'll wrap it up with this. If there's one thing that you want to see come back from the Ghostbusters, or like an Easter egg nod, Brian, what do you think?
Man, that's a good question. I'm going to say I'd like to see Rick Moranis again.
Damn it, that's what I was going to say. That's what I was going to say.
Pulling like the big cards out. Yeah, the ace in the hole.
Yeah. I'd like to see Mr. Moranis make a cameo.
Yeah.
That'd be hilarious.
That would be great. How about you, Dan?
I would love to see Bill Murray make a cameo.
As a ghost or as a Ghostbuster?
Probably as a Ghostbuster.
Yeah.
Or like be the Calvary or something, like just have like a very
reprise
like,
his Space Jam role.
Kinda, yeah. But you know who I bet you we get? You know who I bet we get as a cameo? Which is no offense to her, but I bet you would get Sigourney Weaver out of anybody to make a cameo.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I don't know.
She seems very like cameo pleasing.
You know who I'd love to see?
Don't say Harold Ramis.
Viggo.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. The painting. Yep. I think they're going to nod that at least. My money's on them nodding a paint.
They like, should.
Doing something. That you'll see that tucked in the corner or something somewhere in the scene. For in the background or whatever. But yeah, we'll come back. We've got Brian's movie review, Spotlight, which I don't think a lot of people knew what that whole thing was about before.
So good.
Brian's going to be reviewing that.
Yep.
And then we're leading into a few other things. We got Stephen Curry, Aaron Andrews trial.
Stephen Curry.
And John Oliver Tate on Donald Trump.
Holy crap.
So stick around.
Hey guys, Brian here. Thanks for listening as always. I know I'm usually quite jovial, and I still am, but I did want to talk about a serious issue for a second. So on my parents' street, a street that I grew up on, a street that my parents have lived on for, you know, like 30 years now, two houses down from them, a few weeks ago, a storm drain busted at one house. Being that they live on a hill, all of this water just flooded down the hill and did some pretty catastrophic damage to about 7 homes in total on my parents' block. So what I am doing is spearheading a fundraising effort. You can find some more information on Facebook at facebook.com/cabaret cleanup, and it's spelled C-A-B-A-R-E-T, cleanup, all one word. You can also just donate directly through a PayPal account that I set up, paypal.me, /cabaret cleanup. And I would love, you know, any donations that you can give. It just is going to go directly to the homeowners and residents that were affected by this, and just trying to do my neighborly duty and help out the community. So, yeah, guys, hopefully you can visit and appreciate all the help. Oh, yeah. There we are. That feel-good music. Because once again, that means it's time for Brian's homeless.
Unhomeless.
Unhomeless movie reviews. No, still homeless. I was almost homeless for real. But no, we're here. It's Oscar post week. We did find out the winner of Best Picture among a list of really great potential winners. But the winner for Best Picture here, 2015, although it's 2016, Spotlight. Spotlight I watched, and it is about a group of reporters in the Boston Globe that are all investigative reporters and essentially take on just really either high-profile stories or very controversial stories, just things that, you know, typical reporters wouldn't go after, your cookie-cutter news teams. This particular film focuses on their discovery of widespread child molestation among priests in the Catholic Church, and, you know, not only within Boston, but discovering a really systemic issue among the entire clergy of all of the Catholic Church. pretty alarming stuff, to say the least. Obviously commendable that these reporters worked so hard and were able to figure this out. Because as you know, you watch in the movie, whether all of it be true or a little sprinkle of Hollywood in there, it's just a really interesting story about how these reporters uncovered all of these secrets and the lengths at which they had to do certain things. The film itself, really well done. The direction was great. The acting was really good. Mark Ruffalo, I think, really stole the movie. He played a really interesting character, and you know, how interesting can you make like a reporter for the Boston Globe, right? But he really brought a lot of depth to his performance. I was a little disappointed in Michael Keaton, to be honest, because he plays a guy who's supposed to be born and bred Boston, one of the, you know, good old boys, and he doesn't have an accent. Like he has one.
He can pronounce his R's.
Yeah, it was like watching Robin Hood, you know, with Kevin Costner trying to pull off that English accent.
Robin Hood was supposed to have a Boston accent?
Yes. and Michael Keaton is really the driver in this whole movie too. Like his role is influential and is like the real big cog in this whole process. So it was again a little disappointing to see his performance, because you know, I think he did such a great job in Birdman last year, but you know, is what it is. He was still fine, and the rest of the ensemble you know, played well with each other. I will say though that I don't think it should have won Best Picture. Like it's a good movie, and obviously a very, significant event in not only the history of Boston, but the entire world, because this really was, you know, a systemic issue among the entire Catholic Church. But it just wasn't, I don't know, like it was slow at times. You know, Michael Keaton for me kind of fell flat, and I guess it's just hard to make like a really compelling movie about investigative reporting without, you know, like death or murder and just like a real ugly issue that you have to deal with. So, you know, with all that said, even though this is the best picture of the year, I'm getting it 3.
I knew it.
Out of 5 quarters.
I was holding up 3 fingers before he said it.
Yeah, I thought that was for another reason. But yeah, you know, like I really thought it was going to just blow me away by how good the reviews were, and then obviously winning the best picture. So maybe I just came in with too high of expectations, but it just kind of, you know, was good. But not much to write home about.
No, it has quite an ensemble cast too, right?
McAdams, Keaton.
Yeah, Rachel McAdams is in it. Gosh, I can't remember
Mark Ruffalo.
His name. Mark Ruffalo, obviously the guy from Mad Men.
John Hamm.
Not John Hamm, but his.
Oh, the gray haired dude.
Exactly.
I don't know his name.
Yeah. Oh, and then how can I forget? Liv Schreiber's in it.
Eve.
And he plays like the new editor that comes in. So he's basically the instigating event and the catalyst for this team of reporters to go after this story. So he plays a very important role.
If you've ever seen All the President's Men way back in the day with Redford and Dustin Hoffman, it's kind of like the same type of feel, except not as good, I guess, because All the President's Men was, I would give that 5.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just like after seeing all these great movies this year, and especially recently, it just didn't do a lot for me. Like it didn't, for me was a little disappointing. You know, much like this current presidential race, because in my mind, there are not a lot of strong nominees. And in that breath, I thought it was really enjoyable to see somebody finally just throw darts at Donald Trump, but in a very constructive way, because they're bringing in real facts and, you know, shining light on a guy who is just a complete liar. And that, of course, is John Oliver's, I guess, report.
Last week tonight dropped the mic.
Yeah, I mean, the hardest hitting journalism you'll find is on HBO, apparently.
Which is crazy, too, because that's the one network that I never thought would actually want to assassinate real people. But, my God, they are not holding
back. Dude, I love this show.
Any blows, yeah.
As like, growing up with, like, a passion for journalism, like, this is, like, a platform that's amazing because you get to do it. You get to do it with your own style, and you get to be funny about it. And I liked that he has it set up where it's one issue will take 20 minutes, and that's okay.
Well, and so that's what I think is just to give everybody insight if they haven't seen this yet, because it's been floating around Facebook, it's been floating around social media, everything like that. John Oliver absolutely destroyed I think
Donald Trump.
Any Trump candidacy for the 2016
Hashtag make Donald Trump again.
Yeah. I mean, and it's something that I think you can do for a lot of politicians that are out there right now. But
he could have done it to Ted Cruz.
He could have done it to a lot of people, but the problem is the ego that's kind of wrapped onto the shoulder and knocked onto the door is Donald Trump, and that's who's welcomed this battle, or who's welcomed this onslaught and this character assault.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, when you tell lies on national television and are too arrogant to think that that's not going to come back and bite you in the ass.
The big thing for me was him bringing up the war criminal thing about killing yeah,
on Fox News,
and which is crazy because I mean that's something that like you would think that at any point somebody would
hit him over the head with a mallet so he would stop talking,
or that there may be some political ramifications in place where you cannot say said things.
He's only a candidate; he's not an actual politician, which means he can say it.
Okay. Right. Okay.
He's still a private citizen.
Yeah, he's still a private citizen.
Okay. So as soon as you declare yourself a politician, that's when you're
like, if you're holding office, you're a political figure and you're a public figure and you can't say it. But dude, like, you could just, for Fox and Friends to cringe.
Right.
It takes a lot.
It takes a lot.
He keeps going and they're like, "Let's not talk about killing women and children." Like, it's ridiculous. And then he kind of was like, "Oh, I blamed it on a bad earpiece," because that's what he blames everything on. But yeah, that is the front runner for the GOP.
It was just a retweet.
The front runner for the GOP advocating for a war crime.
And the problem is he's so, like, okay, so if we would recommend anybody to watch this John Oliver piece, I'd say if you could find it anywhere, please do yourself a favor and watch this.
There's
going to
be some sort of viewers. Like, if you are educating the system, you're going to be very sad.
Yeah.
If you were going to vote for Trump, you probably won't care.
Yeah. What's crazy to me at the end of everything or whatever, like, I think with the Daily Show, and I'll just completely throw it out there too, I think I'm much more conservative when it comes to the political process and things like that. But the Daily Show, to me, when I was watching that, I almost felt like it was a little slanted or whatever. John Oliver's approached the show from the very, very get-go as, you act like a fucking idiot, we're going to really expose you as a fucking idiot. And I think that that's what's really, really catering to the leverage that this guy pulls right now. Because there's no real slant to...
He's the stone cold Steve Austin of journalism.
Exactly. Because he's fighting whoever's making a mistake. He's pointed to them, regardless of what side it is on, which is, I think, what's scary you've seen in the past before or whatever. But it's nice to see somebody that has... Dude, the guy's got an arsenal, and he absolutely...
I would, the people that work for him, like
the
writers,
writing team,
they're great.
Holy crap.
And I'm sure he probably poached a few from...
Oh, definitely.
From the Daily Show.
From the Daily Show when Jon Stewart left.
The whole reason why he has this show is because when Jon Stewart went to go film or direct that movie...
Yeah, he hosted.
He filled in, and they were like, oh yeah, he's great. Like we should, you know, that would work perfectly. So let's, one, put him on HBO where he can do whatever. He doesn't have to answer to corporate sponsors. Two, he can curse and get away with a lot more. And three, there's no advertisement. So he has the time. in a show to run a 20-minute story and hold your attention
for 20 minutes. Yeah, keep you engaged for 20 minutes.
And they do it in a fantastic way that is – like, they can hit you with some heavy shit and not make you feel terrible about it. And I think before this report, the best thing I have seen for Trump, like the best piece of I guess you'd call it like anti-Trump propaganda was when Stephen Colbert took Trump footage and had him
debate Trump
himself. Yeah, yeah, and that just speaks so to so many different levels of how this situation is no longer funny.
So an interesting question, I guess, to throw it around right now is, does Trump even respond to this? Because is there a way to actually make yourself seem like the better person when
Trump
you've
doesn't
just
care
been...
about being the better person?
Well, that's the thing. That's the thing completely. But I don't know if Donald Trump, if it's worth it.
I'm sorry. I just got called to go defend.
Yeah, that was my.
I have to go fight Mordor right now.
Sorry about that. But I mean, at the end of the day, though,
the writers of Rohan are calling me.
Yeah, all right, I'll let go on that. At the end of the day, though, do you think it's worth it for Donald Trump to find any sort of creative team to somehow engage in a battle with John Oliver, or has John Oliver already won?
I mean, there's obviously no way for him to rebut anything because it's all
fact. Yeah. It's all matter of fact. It's on the television.
Right. It's on the Twitter account. It's recorded video.
It's legal. Settlements, right. And paperwork
and failed businesses.
Didn't he retweet Mussolini the other day?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
I think he was kind of tricked into it. Whatever. He's an idiot.
He's an idiot. That's how you get tricked into retweeting Mussolini.
Right.
I think it's just the problem with this. It was so good. It was so moving. It was great. They talked about how his name Trump. He values at $3 billion. That's his estimate. For how much his name is worth, that they found his actual surname of his heritage was Drumpf, Drumpf, and that's what they want to make Donald Trump again, and they're filing copyright for that name and trademarking it, and I think that's great. The issue is the millions of people who have come out in these primaries to vote for Donald Trump will not watch this and will not care. And that's the crux of the issue, is you have to pull out...
Well, it's because they can't afford HBO.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's very true. And I don't think HBO, you know, goes out to those neck of the woods. But what this report is necessary for is for the people who don't vote, the apathetic voters, and the people who don't want to see Trump win, who may not want to vote for a different candidate, not in the GOP party, realizing you may have to. Because it's for the better of everybody.
And I think that's a good point that you're bringing up, too, is, like, even if, because, like we always say, we don't want to get into a political debate or anything like that. But I think at the end of the day, if you feel like you're coming from one side or the other, just do yourself a favor and watch this piece. And whatever slant or whatever bias you think that you're bringing towards it or whatever you think you're looking for, if at the end of the day that's what you're intending on doing, just watch the video pieces that they show.
And you will
just
not
watch
be the archive.
Yeah, just
man.
Watch the archival footage of what they're showing that this guy has said, and make your own opinion on that. And I think that's what's. Yeah, at the end of the day, it's creating an arsenal for people like John Oliver that are, man, I think he's probably rooting in the back of his pocket that Trump gets the presidency.
I want a bro force character, John Brawliver.
But
where
I mean,
what he's
day,
slinging is just fats, and
hey,
that's how he kills
at the
people.
End of the day
or
too.
Ronald
I mean,
Trump.
I remember
he throws gold coins at your face.
I remember John Stewart bringing it up back in the day, where he basically said, "You do not want a sane president to take office because that gets rid of all of our jobs. We as a comic that's delivering the news and making fun of the news. If everything makes sense and is logical, you're writing us out of a job." So I think in the back pocket, John Oliver maybe.
No, it's
really
fine,
rooting for
John
Donald
Oliver,
Trump. Or...
The cool thing about him is that his stuff isn't always political like The Daily Show is. It's a lot of world police.
It's more social.
It's,
right.
it's
more
very social.
Social
yeah, bound, so.
That's very true.
But yeah, it's very true. And I think everyone would be happy if they got fired but Donald Trump wasn't president. I think they'd take that.
Yeah.
And by the way, Donald Trump is already in Broforce. He's the devil in the suit at the end of every level.
Yeah, so we did that. So can we talk about that, though, to wrap?
You want to talk about devils in suits?
Devils in suits and Broforce and all that
yeah,
stuff.
We Twitch stream some Broforce, so make sure you check that out on our page if you missed the live Twitch stream tonight. That'll be uploaded.
Check it out, bros.
That was fun.
Do bro self a favor.
And I was shooting people from long distance, man. I was shooting people from out there.
Yeah, what did we... Okay, so this is a game... Okay, can we talk about this really quick? We'll wrap it up with this. We played Broforce tonight on the Twitch stream. It was Pop Not Broda. I tried to pass that off you guys, and you guys just shot that out of the sky right away.
You can't touch the name, man.
Yeah, Pop Not Soda doing Broforce. So we did that a couple hours ago. This game is basically an indie game, Minecraft-ish, I would say, or it's got destructible environments. 16-bit.
Yeah, great 16-bit feel.
Yeah, yep. The funniest thing about it, though, is they have characters from every single franchise. I don't know how legally they got away with this.
I think it's,
but like,
it's the parody law.
Okay.
That's what that's yeah, how you but, buy I mean, it. It's
you've
parody.
You've got Indiana Bromes. Who is your favorite, Dan?
Definitely Bro Dread.
Oh, Bro Dread delivering the law. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
The hammer of the law.
Swift
how about
justice.
You, Brian?
Probably RoboCop.
Yeah.
Yeah, good one.
Weak special, though.
Weak special, but the sidearm is real strong. Real strong with the
sidearm.
Whatever Ash from Evil Dead, what it was his
brother.
Ash Williams.
Ash Williams.
Yeah.
He was great with the boomstick and the chainsaw. Yeah.
I think I'm going with my favorite. It's somewhat original, Rambro. I like Rambro.
Yeah, Rambro.
I will say the best is...
Command Bro is also good.
Yeah, Command Bro is very good.
The noisy cricket, though, I think, is the best new weapon. The new weapon.
Bro in Black?
Yeah, the Bro in Black has the noisy cricket, which is, I think, the best new weapon.
Yeah. So if you haven't seen that, check it out. We're going to be on Twitch after this. You can go to our website and check that out. We're going to have the video up there,
yeah, it'll
too.
Be up on popnotsoda.podme.com. Click on video games.
We made it through Cambrodia and a few other places.
Yeah, we liberated Cambrodia.
Oh my god. I think it's a good place to wrap it up, though. That was a good episode, guys. I will tell you really quick, between us, some big stuff's happening this weekend, and you'll probably know about it as of Monday. So yeah, want to get you guys in the loop. So
oh yeah, any hints? Can you drop some hints?
Gonna be popping the question to Allison, so insider information. You guys are in
wow.
The know. Yeah.
Wow. So you heard it here last.
Yeah, you heard it here. Yeah,
already happened.
Hasn't happened, but...
It's a big step. Ask for anal. I mean, it's a huge question.
Damn it, Brian. Anyway. And we'll completely forget that segment.
So as always, we have been Pop Not Soda, your weekly sits patch of pop culture. If you haven't already, make sure to check out Brian's What I'm Watching for this week, because he previewed a little bit of a new Fox comedy, a new sitcom. So if you're in the need for that, check out his What I'm Watching. Don't forget to be on the lookout for my weekly Dirt Dab. And our full-length episodes released every Monday on iTunes and popnotsoda.podbean.com. If you miss us throughout the week, make sure to follow us on Twitter. Brian is at BOwen619. Brett is at Nieces Pieces. Myself, I'm at Dan_Perez_, or our general account at Pop_NotSoda. And please don't forget, because we are only 2 weeks away from the Royal Stumble.
Woo! Let's get ready to stumble.
Nicely done. Our charity pub
That's
crawl.
Amazing.
It'll be kicking
Thank
off
you.
On Saturday, March
Second
19th
night.
At
Second
2
job.
P.M. Yep. And we've already got a few bars lined up. We've got more details to come. There is a Facebook event out, and you want to check our Facebook page for more updates. Signing off for Brett and Brian, I have been Dan. Enjoy your week.
Not too much, though.